You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com on WCRS FM 98.3 and 102.1, Central Ohio's only community radio station, a service of the Neighborhood Network and TalkTainmentRadio.com. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or KNE World Network, LLC.
Good evening. This is Al Warner, and you are at the table with Al Warner. This is TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio. This is radio the way it should be heard. This week, I don't think that we could legitimately talk about anything other than the shooting, the massacre, the assassination in Charleston, South Carolina, and some of the backlash, pushback, some of the things that people are saying motivated it, some of the excuses people want to give, etc., etc., etc. Now, I'm going to apologize up front because typically my opening monologue is between 5 to 7 minutes long, and tonight I'm going to tell you it's going to be considerably longer before I introduce my very, very special guest. But I'm going to tell you, the events of last Wednesday hit me on a visceral level. I'd hate to say as a warrior that it took my head out of the game for a minute, but I needed a few days to recollect, and to reflect, and to bounce back. Because Charleston reminded me of the 63 bombing of the church that killed 4 little black girls. Charleston reminded me of all of the things that we like to say are remnants of the past. But sometimes in the course of human events, things happen that defy belief or understanding, such as the case of the massacre in Charleston, South Carolina last week of 9 church members doing a prayer meeting at Mother Emanuel AME Church. By now you all know about the alleged lone gunman, Dylan Roof, who thought his actions would ignite a race war in the United States, or at least an official and declared race war. You see, it's my contention that the sentiments and ideologies that ignited the war on some levels between the North and the South has never really been resolved. They have morphed into various states of acceptance, acknowledgement, and subterfuge, but to some, the war over ideology has never really ended. It has masqueraded as tolerance, but has consistently raised its natural head with all of its natural proclivities in state-sponsored terrorism of black people, black men in particular, by means of police aggression and force against us. Stand your ground laws, which are designed to protect a frightened population against us. Gun laws that favor relaxed treatment for anyone except us. And a systematic turning of the heads when our rights and freedoms are violated. In the past few years, we've had impressed upon our psyche the lack of value placed on black people in this country. Additionally, coupled with passive and aggressive methods of white supremacy, we've been warned that our presence is always in question or under suspicion. CVS Pharmacy has just been outed for having a corporate policy in New York that advised all stores to pay particular attention and scrutiny to black patrons. So it's now no longer just driving while black, it's now been extended to shopping while black. But let's not stop there. Trayvon proved that you can't walk while black. Eric Garner proved that being choked while being black really isn't being choked. A restaurant in Denton, Florida recently told a black man that he had to be served in the back of the store on the outside. One problem. He just happened to be a U.S. attorney. So I'm sure you'll be hearing more about this. But you can't eat while black. The brother in North Charleston who was unarmed and running away from the police was assassinated by being shot in the back. And then the police wanted to plant evidence on him. This proves you can't run while black. The recent swimming pool incident in Texas where a 15-year-old black girl was manhandled by police. Now, he resigned, but you can't party or swim while black, especially after being called the N-word by white residents. Jason Harrison proves that being mentally ill is only a white rationale for violence because he was gunned down by Dallas police for waving a knife at them from 30 feet away because they feared for their lives. So you can't be mentally ill while black. New York Police Department police statistics show that 96% of police shootings are of black or Latino people. So you not only can't you be black, but you're in jeopardy if you're brown. The 137 bullets fired at a Cleveland couple who pulled over in a middle school parking lot during a police chase proved you can't even comply while being black. Officers thought that a car backfire was someone in the car shooting at them. No gun was ever found. The case of Rekia Boyd in Chicago, the 22-year-old woman who was shot in the face and killed by police officers because she stopped at her neighbor's house for help, proves you can't ask the neighbor for help while black. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Reserve Deputy Robert Bates accidentally shoots a man he claims he was trying to taser. So any excuse will do when shooting a black person, or as Rick Perry would say, oops. John Crawford shot on sight in Walmart while walking around the store shopping with an air rifle that he was buying in the store. So carrying merchandise in the store while black is problematic. South Carolina State Trooper Sean Grubert is fired after a dash cam video shows him shooting an unarmed black man during a routine traffic stop. Now, I want you to keep in mind that when the police pulled the assassin from Charleston over, they both put their guns back in their holsters and even took this son of a gun to Burger King. 12-year-old Tamir Rice proves that as a child, you can't even play in the playground while black. And now the Charleston Massacre, partnered with a rash of church fires in the 80s and 90s and the bombing of a church in 1963 that killed four little black girls. Does this prove that it may even be difficult to pray while black? I think that what I find most disturbing is how ready some are to dismiss this as perhaps an act against religious freedom. But as details became clearer, the new accounting became a mental health issue. Then, as the assassin's true words became known, those people begrudgingly admitted that race may have been a factor. And their final admission, when all started to come out, was that this was a race crime, a hate crime, so to speak. Why is it so painful when it is so painfully obvious that it is difficult to discuss race and its issues in America and address its inequities and the systemic efforts to maintain the imbalances? Are these attitudes about race isolated or predominant among the white culture? Some would say that there are only a few dinosaurs left from this system of white supremacy and that we have moved on from those days. I think we've disproved that myth on our post-racial America series here on At the Table. While others look to a more sinister reality and believe that the assassin is only a manifestation of an ideology that is deep-rooted in the mainstream of America. This might be proven in Facebook entries from volunteer Texas firefighter Curtis Cook, who was fired earlier this week from the MeBank Fire Department for his comment that said this: Dylan Roof needs to be praised for the good deed that he has done. And then there's this flag issue. Many are now applauding South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, flanked by a relatively confused group of Republicans and two Democrat politicians, because she proclaimed it's time to remove the flag from State House grounds. Wow, what a grand gesture. Well, considering the passion that many still have for that flag, I guess it's a start, but please don't confuse me for a brother who thinks this settles the issue. Beyond the obvious realities of the flag and the Civil War, let's take a look at that flag's history and meaning. The flag was hung at the State House in 1961. Yes, 1961, not 1861, 1961. And it was in a direct response to desegregation and to the civil rights movement and blacks demanding fair and equitable treatment. The response throughout the South, not just South Carolina, but subsequently Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Texas, and Mississippi, was to hoist the flag as a symbol that the old South and what it represented to people of color would not be denied. You can find in a document called the Cornerstone Speech the true definition of the Confederacy and the ideology behind that flag. The Cornerstone Speech declared that the true foundation of the Confederacy was slavery. Slavery now, of some sort, slavery forever. The flag represents the cornerstone of a racist and restrictive Confederacy. That flag is a symbol of oppression, intimidation, and treason. That flag is a symbol of white supremacy, the subrugation and abrogation of a people of people of color, Rachel Dolezal excluded. The flag represents intolerance. The flag represents and speaks loudly to people who share the ideology that America is a white person's country and all others, and I mean all others, need to be kept in their place, especially the niggas. The flag is not about preserving South heritage and pride unless you still abide slavery. It is a symbol of hate. If you doubt that, just consider how it's used all over the world. In Europe, the swastika is outlawed at public demonstrations. What Aryan skinheads and white supremacists have turned to as a replacement symbol for their cause is the rebel flag, the Confederate flag. This flag, in their mind, represents an ideology of hate and separation. So why is it taking so long for us in America to recognize and embrace how despicable this symbol of oppression and racist thought is? Hell, all of Europe has outlawed the swastika, the German symbol of oppression. This flag doesn't need to be in a museum, as some say. It needs to be removed permanently from our civilization and eventually our collective memories and retired to that period of American history in a book. But even though the flag didn't shoot those nine churchgoers, it serves as a constant reminder to some of a legacy and ideology of hate for black people. That is just below the surface in many mainstream communities. To paraphrase a sentiment from the NRA, flags don't kill people, people kill people. But this flag does inspire and incite the emotions in some to live up to its hate-filled legacy. So this sick pathology of racism has got to be addressed from a much deeper level than a flag, a symbol, or a hidden beyond some excuse as a mental illness. It is too pervasive throughout our entire society.